If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. My name is Adam Pranica.
My name is Ben Harrison. Adam, when we started this, did you ever think that serious-minded, legitimate publications would ever write about us?
Never. Not at all. I thought we would be... People who wrote about us, I figured, would be relegated to the dark corners of the
of the dark web.
yeah, a whole lot of blogs, mostly.
Yeah,
tiny blogs specifically.
Well, we got a very, very nice write up in Ars Technica early on, and that sort of tracked because I think that Ars Technica has a long and a long history of writing about Star Trek: The Next Generation based things.
Sure. Our buddy Sarus wrote that one.
Sarus Farivar, yeah.
Yeah.
We have an article about us in Slate.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I think my sense is that a lot of people listening to this may be coming in from the Slate article. So if you're new to the show, welcome. We are here to make fart jokes and make fun of how much sex Riker is probably having.
It's funny, the author of the article, Sarah Archer, like reached out to us and she's like, look guys, I somehow convinced my editor that writing about you would be a good idea, which is like a great open to me.
Yeah,
like sort of joking about how ridiculous it is that we're even having the conversation. And we sort of did like an interview with her, and then she never explained what it would turn into. I felt like it was kind of a mystery.
Yeah,
as to what kind of article it would be.
I think sometimes those interview over texts, they wind up just being like the interview itself, like the stuff we wrote back. But she wrote like a real article.
Yeah, it's way more than we deserve.
Yeah, it was supremely flattering, and it was really cool to have that happen. And another cool thing happened. We went on the Who Won the Week podcast from Blaster.com. We got mentioned in a Blaster article a while ago, just kind of an offhand mention, and it turned into meeting Danny Roth, the guy that wrote the article, and then him inviting us on their show, which was real fun. We got to talk about Star Trek Beyond and the new series that's coming out. So if you're interested in a geeky podcast that can hang with the likes of us, go check out the Who Won the Week podcast.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say we're kind of an open podcast relationship. Like we'll go on other people's podcasts.
Yeah, if you want us on your podcast,
we'll put our microphones in the bowl and then go have a couple of drinks.
This is like the ice storm.
Yeah.
The podcast revolution is a great way to catch the clap.
Pretty big week for us. Pretty fun.
So, welcome to newbies, and thanks, Danny and Sarah, for putting us on.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Well, with that, why don't we get back to what we do best, which is tell the jokes of dick and fart. specifically today about Season 3, Episode 9, The Vengeance Factor.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not
excited to ramble on about something everyone knows.
This is sort of the season of cold opens, isn't it?
Seriously.
I love this shit. We are on the green gel planet right away. We're looking out a window.
We're beaming down to Greentown, and they beam down to this outpost that's like all beat to shit. It's like in way worse shape than the duck blind on the Mintaken planet. and they're like, they're looking around and they realize that the power generator has been ganked, and they find some shanks that have blood all over them, and they're like, well, this isn't human blood. It's some other kind. We're going to have to figure it out. And at some point, they put Worf on the task of getting through a door, and, you know, we know that Worf, if you're new to the show, go back and listen to old episodes. You will discover that there is a long track record of Worf not being a friend of doors. So.
Ben, is the best rivalry on Next Generation the Worf versus door rivalry?
It's jammed.
I don't know that there is a bigger one than that.
I like how sweet Data is about it, because he never lords the fact over Worf that when Worf is defeated by a door, it's always Data's job to go fix the situation.
Yeah.
But Data pries him open, and there's a couple scientists passed out, assed out. And this is some shit.
Yeah, they're pretty fucked up, and their whole station's been tumbled. Like in the police parlance, they tossed it, didn't they?
Yeah, this was not a sneak and peek. This was a full toss warrant.
Right.
The doctor's hair has changed again, by the way.
Sure. Yeah.
She has like a whole different haircut now.
I'm really wondering if the uniforms are $3,000, how much are the three wigs that she's got? Because really, really good Hollywood wigs are very expensive.
Yeah, no joke. And Beverly Crusher has as many haircuts as episodes in this season, it seems like.
Yeah.
She's looking good. I feel like there was a previous one, though, that looked better.
She has not brought back the Dilbert haircut, though.
Yeah.
From her triumphant return to the series.
Yeah, well,
I feel like that was a special edition, right? That was the holo card of wigs for Beverly
sure.
Crusher.
Yeah. Yeah, she wore it once, and then she put it in under a Lexan glass case, and it's in the prop hall of fame now.
You know how in like modern baseball cards, sometimes there will be the baseball card that has like a little 1-inch cutout of a baseball uniform?
Mm-hmm.
God, I feel like these Star Trek cards we open up all the time, how great would it be if there was a little lock of wig hair on a special edition card?
That'd
wouldn't
be cool.
Wouldn't you go crazy for that?
Nothing would make me happier.
Yeah. Nothing would be cooler than your nightstand table having a George Baxter nude card along with a lock of Beverly Crusher hair on it. Your wife would be cool with that, right?
She'd be super chill with that, yeah.
Yeah.
So the scientists that they found have been phasered up quite a bit.
Multiple blasts.
They're going to recover, but they're pretty fucked up. And they discover that the blood on this shank that they found is
unique to one humanoid species, the Akamarians.
There's a stable government on Akamar 3, which is the planet that they come from, but there are kind of drifter Akamari who are members of these clans, and they are
the gatherers.
They're just troublemakers in this part of the galaxy. Like, they go around and hijack things and steal equipment, and they're basically the alien scum of the galaxy, to borrow a term from Undiscovered Country.
They've never come out this far before.
In the wrestling parlance, the Akamari are the WCW, and the Gatherers are the NWO faction that are just there to fuck shit up.
You're gonna have to, if you want to take that metaphor and run with it, I give you my blessing, but I'm not gonna understand anything.
I'm speaking for a very specific subset of our viewership.
They beam up the sovereign of Akamar 3, who's like, for all intents and purposes, the queen of the planet, and
she's got real Angela Lansbury vibes, doesn't she?
Yeah, I don't know who this actress was, but I thought she was really terrific.
Her name is Sovereign Maruk. They take her into the conference room for a little powwow. where she gives us the backstory of this conflict between her people and the Splinter Group.
So here's the deal. They have a pretty good thing going on Akamar 3, and they're pretty happy not to have the scumbags that have left them not hanging around. And she says, like, listen, we've tried a couple of times to reintegrate them into our society. They're party animals. They don't know what's good for them. And frankly, at this point, we're like pretty happy to just let them go fuck themselves. And Picard talks her into the fact that it's making the whole area of space around Akamar more dangerous for everybody. And she doesn't really have a lot to lose by trying to reintegrate them into the society.
Area has a hobo problem.
Yeah.
That's sort of what it feels like.
So she says, like, okay, we're cool. I'll help you out. I'll try to extend an olive branch to these guys, but you're going to have to beam a couple more of my servants on board because I couldn't possibly travel with anything fewer than four. So they beam up a lovely young woman named Yuta.
Yuta, give me two.
And Riker is hitting on her basically immediately. Like, she is in his crosshairs from the second she sets foot on the ship. She's like, I cook for and feed the Sovereign, and I taste her food to make sure it's not poisoned. And he's like, well, why don't you cook something for me?
What's your specialty?
I have none.
Don't be modest.
He asks what her specialty is, and she describes something with fleshy roots.
Mm-hmm.
And Riker's like, oh, I could be into that.
I look forward to tasting it.
Yeah. He's also looking at that crack in her forehead, wondering what happens if he, like, licks or kisses it. Maybe he can slip a finger in there.
So I stroke it, and I pet it, and I massage it.
Yeah, her forehead really looks like a canoe.
And then I take my naughty pet, and I go...
Yeah, all these aliens have camel toe head.
Yeah, she's got a slight comb over on top of this thing, but it's definitely there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's got like a bang to try and hide it, but she's not doing a great job.
Riker, when he meets Yuta, like gives her a good 5-second boob stare, like it's really savage.
Yeah, he's a single minded character, you know, like that's just the energy he brings on the show.
Yeah, he shows her how the food thing works, and he orders her a cup of water, right?
Yeah, and she has to test it before she gives it to the Sovereign. So she's like expecting there to be a kitchen, and he's like, "Oh, you can just replicate all of the food that you need on this ship," but she's still gonna make sure that the Sovereign isn't being poisoned. So how right. stable can their society really be if that's enough of a concern that somebody has to risk their life routinely every single day to make sure that the food is okay?
Yeah. She's got that old school, like, what era is this? Like a Renaissance period fear yeah. of being poisoned, food-wise.
Pre-Enlightenment French nobility type poison fears.
That's going to be a long episode title, but I think we can make that play.
It is a guiding principle on which Darth Vader is based. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So the Sovereign lady has an idea of where they can start to look for this missing Federation equipment, and if they find that, they can start to figure out where all the Akamari gatherers are at. And so they head to this place, and this is a really awesome set piece. It's like
yeah.
this, a lot of scaffolding and truss work and caged clamp lights from a construction site, and various scrap metal is dropped around, and there's like 55-gallon drums with fires in them. Frank Stallone is off shooby-dooing in the corner.
It looks great. And this is the second complex set that we've had in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. The sets in this episode are 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Consistently across the board. They're really good. And there's a bunch of them. And this is
so we got a Dustbuster club of who do we got? We got Worf and Riker and Data.
Yeah, Worf, Riker, Data. I think Geordi might be in there. Maybe not. Might just be Worf, Riker, Data.
And they're kind of skulking around looking for the stolen items, right?
Yeah, and they do a great job of establishing a huge scale for this. Yeah. Like, they'll show somebody, you know, like a shot from above, somebody walking on a catwalk, and then somebody like two levels below them walking around. Mm-hmm. They find the generator that's missing. They find some scrap metal that's not worth anything. And they're like, man, these guys will just jack anybody for anything.
They weren't the sort of pirates that are always looking for gold, right?
No.
They're just taking anything that they can find that isn't bolted to the floor.
They get pinned down under phaser fire, and Riker uses his knowledge of metallurgy to get them to... No, Geordi is there. It's Geordi that's got the knowledge of metallurgy. They shoot their phasers at the scrap metal, causing it to vaporize, and then they like make a ploy at beaming out of there while the smoke is thick in the air, and then they kind of reposition themselves to surround these gatherers. And
real spy hunter smoke screen.
Yeah,
set up.
I mean, it's more like fun tactical maneuvering than you usually get. You know, this is pretty inventive writing, I think. So they convince these guys. This is like a hair metal band that would have been opening for Wayne Campbell's girlfriend's band, kind of group of guys.
These guys look, I mean, I'm going to keep bringing back the wrestling stuff, but they look like wrestling characters. They look like people who have rolled around in a scrapyard and are wearing magnetic jackets. They've just got a bunch of metal stuck to them.
My theory is that they're the shitty Beatles, but you do you.
All right.
The leader guy, you can tell he's the leader because his V is much deeper than everybody else's.
And he can go chest to chest with Riker on chest hair, though.
He has a real carpet sample under his shirt.
That chest hair game is strong.
And he's persuaded to sit down with Sovereign Maruk and talk this idea out of, you know, potentially reintegrating into society, but not before he's kind of established what a ruffian he is, how little he thinks of her status and all that.
Go home, old woman!
You people haven't changed in 100 years!
You should know. You were there!
and he has to have that conversation in private, because his kind of woofy is based on what an asswipe everybody admires him for being.
Sure. Yeah, he's got to keep up his airs.
Yeah.
For the good of the troops.
So while they're having this conversation, Yuta sneaks off and, like, ices this old man. He's like old man right out of, like, Beyond Thunderdome. It's shuffling around, and she puts a hand on his cheek while explaining that she's from the clan Trelesta, and
I am the last of my line, but my clan will outlive yours.
Dude dies very quickly, and so while they're formulating the plan to have everybody board the Enterprise and go off to look for more gatherers, it's revealed that there's been a death, and like the gatherers don't really give a shit, right? Like, they're like, yeah, he's dead. Nobody cares. He was old.
They give a shit insofar as like one of the dudes wants his shit. Like, they want his stuff.
Yeah, he wants to take
his
boots.
Can I take these boots though? Mm-hmm. And they're still warm.
Yeah, and that really grosses Maruk out. But
you ever put on a pair of warm bowling shoes? That always creeps me out.
Yeah. Yeah, and he didn't even spray any of that stuff inside.
Yeah. Yeah, weird. He's going to put them right on.
Yeah, that's how you get foot fungus.
Yeah, Beverly beams down and is like, well, he's been dead too long for me to do anything about it. Which makes me wonder, like, what's the time limit, you think?
I don't know. Does it vary species to species?
It has to.
Must. It must. So yeah, and I think that this death has interest, provides interesting insight to the two sides of the Akamari fight, and also into the way the Enterprise operates, because they're like we don't care that you don't care that this guy died. We're going to look into it, you know.
Yeah, this is what we do whenever anyone dies.
Right,
like, this is a sort of policy, a matter of Federation policy.
Mm-hmm. So they are doing this research as they head to meet the other gatherers. The leader of the gatherers, this guy Chorgan.
Chorgan sounds like a Greek yogurt.
Yeah. Yeah, fruit at the bottom.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurses the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
Chorgan looks and acts like Riblet from SNL.
Yeah, it's Riblet, baby! Wanted!
Did you get that vibe from him?
I don't know Riblet.
Oh, man.
I was gonna say he was a wrestler type. Like, he was more wrestler type than any of them, I feel like. He's got the build for it.
He's definitely got that vibe, but he
and he lives in a van down by the river.
He's got those crazy Bobby Moynihan eyes.
Yeah,
you know?
He does. So he's the kind of guy who sees the Enterprise pulling up on his vastly inferior ship and starts like lighting them up with purple laser beams.
Yeah, I love that. Hey, purple lasers are back.
And
they got another paycheck.
And Worf is just like he's laughing his ass off at how puny this guy's weapon systems are. And what they wind up doing is shooting him with a phaser that's capable of dropping his shields and not harming his ship, which is very merciful of them.
Their forward shields are inoperative.
Well done, Lieutenant.
And I mean, like, I feel like rules of engagement, like, they could have just taken this guy out of the sky right then and there, right?
Yeah, that's a bully move, though.
Yeah. Not Picard's stilo.
No, so, not so, at all.
So with this accomplished, they just beam right over, which is pretty ballsy on Picard's part. Like, he's like, they're not going to do shit. The Enterprise has phasers locked on them, and they don't have any shields. I'm beaming over there myself.
Shields down, don't care situation.
Yarmouk, Angelad, and Tanagra.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves. For 25% off. I've got to fly cross country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com and the promo code is SCARVS.
Hi. This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Tom Angela.
While they're over there, they start to like get negotiations started. And it's like a real, you know, like it's like a diplomatic summit, basically. Like there's people sitting around a big...
There's a long table.
A big table.
There's a mediator in the middle.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Ginger Jesus couldn't make it, but Picard is gonna sit in, and so while they're working these terms of reintegration out, they're back on the Enterprise. They're like looking through the records because the doctor has discovered that this old man died from a virus that is very specifically engineered to kill members of the Lornak clan, and. They discover this because the only other person that's ever died of it was also Lornak, and he was killed like 50 years ago, and he was killed while he was standing trial for something, and they find a picture of this guy being taken, like perp walked to trial, and Yuta is chilling in the background of this picture. And she looks the same age. And Riker really freaks out at this moment because he realizes how close he came to fucking an old.
And with what we know from Yuta's killing of the old man, she's got that rogue from X-Men power. Like,
yeah.
Like, she could have killed him.
Yeah. I mean, he's made some skin-to-skin contact with her. There's a scene where he's basically trying to get her to bang and... She gets real submissive with him, and in that moment, he finds that to be a big turnoff.
Don't you want me to give you pleasure?
Not as a servant. I told you I prefer equals.
Yeah. Like Riker wants her to get hers first. He's a very giving lover.
Well, I think that there's probably situations...
Well, he wants to give before he takes and takes and takes and takes.
Like, yeah.
But that first give is on her.
I think that... My gut with Riker is that there are women that he would trust with a submissive role in some underpants play.
Uh-huh.
But that's a bond of trust, and he doesn't want to inflict dominance on somebody that's not really a fully enthusiastic consenter.
You know, not on first bang, at least.
Yeah, you got to get to know each other.
Yeah.
Establish some safe words. So,
I mean, she seems very willing to taste things that could be potentially dangerous. So, I think in that way, I think Riker's laundry list of VD is not going to be a deterrent for her.
Yeah,
she's put far dirtier things in her mouth,
right?
Than Will Riker.
But she really like turns this into.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ben. Was that too dirty for you?
Might be too dirty for our scads and scads of new listeners that came through the previously respected publication of Slate.com.
Yeah, well, I think they've all turned us off by now.
Yeah. She turns this scene into like a real bummer fest because he is not going to bang her under the pretext that she is his actual submissive. Like, that's only fun for him if it's part of a game.
Right.
And
right.
And it winds up being kind of her feeling trapped in this mission that she's has. And what we come to find out is that her body has been changed to essentially be a weapon against members of this Lornak clan, where she ages much slower than normal and her cells are full of this virus that will kill any Lornak that she comes in contact with. And it's all a big vengeance play because the Lornaks wiped out the Trelests in a clan battle way back in the day. And she's like one of the few survivors and got tasked with this horrible mission.
She's a human weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And guess not a human weapon, she's a Trelesta weapon.
Yeah, and guess who happens to be the last Lornak after that old man died?
Yeah, it's Ripley, baby!
So they're at the negotiation table. Shit is going, like, it's a little tense, and Picard is like, maybe we should have some brandy and chill out. And and
brandy and chill.
Yeah, and so Yuta is, like, pouring it and getting ready to walk a glass of it over to Riblet when Riker beams onto the bridge of the ship and
he's got a dustbuster on him.
Yeah, like one of the gatherers like tries to take him out the second he beams on. He's like, "This is a trap," and Riker stuns the guy and then starts telling Yuta to like back the fuck up and that Riblet is in grave and impending danger. And Riker has to vaporize her.
Yeah, she sort of suicide by cops a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, Riker over and over again is like, do not take another step toward Riblet. And she's like, you don't understand, man. Like, this is the last one. I complete the bingo card if I can get to him. And he's like, don't do it. And she's like, seriously, this is what I've been born for and trained for. I got to do this. And
I've been playing this game of bingo for 53 years, dude.
And Riker finally, like, he hits her with a phaser blast to stun her. The stunner doesn't do much. And then it cuts to him turning up the juice.
Yeah, was she
on the
like
dustbuster?
Was she like beefed up with this genetic upgrade? She's like,
it had to be, right?
She's. Because the one guy, when Riker stuns him, flies across the room. And then when he hits her, she stumbles a bit, but she just keeps going. And he cranks the dustbuster up to full suck, and it's like past the gore setting because she vaporizes. We don't even see her skeleton.
Yeah, yeah. And she did.
I am the cutest of all.
And so with her out of the way, that's really the only barrier between a truce between the two sides, right?
Yeah, I think that it was a good act of goodwill to save that dude's life.
Yeah.
Probably him getting assassinated by the handmaiden of the sovereign would have really put a cramp in the peace negotiations.
Riker's really bumming, though. Like, we cut back to the ship.
He's having the purple lemonade of grieving.
Yeah, I called it the purple drink of justice. Because he did what he had to do, right?
Yeah.
It's different from the pink lemonade of grief, because at that moment he was just sad.
Yeah.
But this time justice was involved, and he had to deploy that justice.
a little blue got into that
barrel of a
pink
phaser. Yeah.
So and Picard tries to like cheer him up by saying, maybe you can get some extra shore leave when we stop at the next starbase. And
that's pretty cold comfort because every time they go to a starbase, the ship gets stolen. So he's like, how much am I really going to relax over there?
Yeah. Gotta have my wits about me at starbases.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's our close. That's our episode.
Mm-hmm.
Riker had to kill someone. This is one of the episodes where Riker kills someone but does not fuck someone in that episode.
Yeah. I mean, we...
Kind of an existential imbalance for Will Riker.
We don't know for sure if he didn't fuck Maruk or one of her male assistants, but...
Sure, yeah.
They didn't depict that part.
Yeah. That was in a cutscene. Ben, did you like this episode?
I did like this episode. I think it had some fun set pieces, an interesting premise. I think that the character of Maruk was very well portrayed. She's like, she really feels like a politician in a way that's more authentic than a lot of the politicians that we see on this show.
Yeah.
And I thought that the idea of these, you know, just them kind of hitting the hornet's nest accidentally and stirring up all these entrenched hatreds that go back generations is really interesting.
I thought this was an episode that sort of was a good example of one of two things. Either the effects have gotten less costly for the show to pay for, or they've gotten a lot more money to spend. Because it wasn't too long ago, Ben, that like each phaser blast was like $10,000 to render, right? Like, and they would use them very judiciously. This episode had like 50 phaser blasts in it. They had two complex sets, and that doesn't count Ribbit's bridge
set.
Yeah. I thought it was a great episode in terms of production value, and that isn't even to mention that the story was real strong. It was good.
Yeah, man.
Especially because I didn't remember this episode at all before seeing it. Like, this was a total dead zone for me, and it felt like watching a new one, which is always fun for me.
That's cool. Yeah, I like this episode a lot.
Yeah. Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I did find a drunk Shimoda. Yuta could have just banged Riker.
Sure.
I mean, I guess she's a slave to her own worldview and couldn't conceive of a way to bang him where they were on equal footing.
She's been through some shit.
But if she had just, if you'll pardon the expression, sucked it up and banged him and not made it all about her feeling trapped in her mission, he would never have been on to her. I don't think he would have suspected that she had something to do with it. I don't think that...
Yeah. He could have defended her.
Yeah.
Do you think he could have fixed her, though, too? Like, with his love?
I think that getting deep-dicked by William Riker can right a lot of wrongs.
Yeah, I think so, too. Sometimes, I think there's an alternate reality where that dicking happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Sometimes in my life when I feel like I've got problems that are insurmountable, I just wish Riker was inside me and everything was okay again.
Is this your idea of sex?
I mean, a deep dicking could have really saved Riblet's life. is a description that I never thought we'd say on the show.
No, but I mean, I also just think it's crazy to me that she spent 53 years pursuing this and then it seems like she kind of lost her nerve right at the end, you know? She, like, kind of wanted to confess to Riker in that moment. And
yeah, she was clearly conflicted at that moment because if she was really hell-bent on completing her mission, she would have lunged over the banquet table and got him, right?
Right.
Poor Riker.
Poor dude.
Hope that purple drink fixed him up. My drunk Shimoda happened during a scene that we didn't talk about. So... Riker is in 10 Forward with Deanna Troi, and they're enjoying a dinner that Yuta makes of the fleshy roots. They're enjoying the fleshy root dinner.
Yeah. It looks like collard greens.
Yeah. And Yuta's like, how's that flesh taste? How are those roots? And Riker's like, this is fucking great. And even Troi, like they're both being, initially they're both being polite. And then Troi puts them in her mouth, and she's like, holy shit, this is actually awesome. This is really good.
This is real tasty.
Yeah. And so there's like a pregnant pause where Yuta's standing at their table. Troi and Riker are enjoying their meal. And Riker's like, why don't you join us? Come on and sit down and get down on this root. And there is a moment where Riker looks at Troi. Troi looks at Riker. Troi looks at Yuta. And then goes, oh, right, okay, I better go. Like, I better leave. But I think in that moment, Deanna Troi momentarily considered a three-way. Mm-hmm. She's like, am I invited to this or not? Maybe I would rather just enjoy a night in with a good book.
Yeah, well, so she's frequently now wingmanned for Riker.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think partly is just to give herself a little bit of a break.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was super cool of her. Like, what could be more Shimoda-y than being a great wingman?
Yeah.
And just, like, seeing a situation, like, the roots on the table, right? Like, mm-hmm. She sees it for what it is.
Yeah.
She's like, all right, you two kids. Why don't you go bang that forehead, Will? So, that was my Shimoda. I guess I'm giving my Shimoda to Deanna.
Yeah.
For being a good wingman.
Solid one.
Yeah.
Well selected.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
Hey, Ben, let's talk about something real fast before getting to what our next episode is. I think you and I have kicked around an idea for the last few weeks that maybe we want to share with our viewers. And that is the idea of some messaging. A number of the shows on the podcast network have what are called Jumbotron ads that their listeners sign up for that get read on these shows.
It's $100 for a personal message or $200 for a spot. And so, like, you'll hear ads on Jordan, Jesse, Go! Or My Brother and Me or The Flophouse for, like, somebody's graphic novel or a birthday message for somebody's friend or whatever. And
yeah, these aren't like those audible.com ads or like yeah. Or like Casper mattress ads. These are like messages from real people who have something cool that they want to share.
Yeah, and so I think what we're going to do is open our show up to those. I would love to wish you happy birthday in the character of Picosby or
do a little This Old Enterprise in honor of maybe a new home purchase.
Yeah, yeah. So if you've got any inclination to send someone a message or promote your thing, you know, we have thousands of eager and enthusiastic listeners. Maybe you have a thing you want them to know about. So go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and you can sign up for that. And it would be hugely appreciated by us because we're just trying to find ways to, you know, make this show generate enough money to justify the vast amounts of time we devote to it.
Right, and do it in a fun way that isn't like a blatant cash grab,
right?
Or mattress grab, if you will. Mm-hmm. We're still not sponsored by Casper, and this is a thing that really grinds my gears, Ben, because I really need a new mattress.
If anybody from Casper is listening, Adam is desperate right now.
I'm dying right now.
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus aboard. You are bored.
Hey, Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is Season 3, Episode 10, The Defector. A Romulan defector leads the crew into a showdown that could erupt into a full-scale war.
The full-scale war.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of those HO-scale wars or an N-scale war, oh, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad used to have one of those wars in his basement.
Sure. Yeah. I love an N-scale war playset.
Yeah, he'd put on his conductor cap and go down there and just keep his attention for hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anything to stay in the basement. I thought I might have remembered this one, but I think I confused this with another episode where like a Starfleet captain goes rogue and Chief O'Brien has to like talk him down. And that's not this episode. That's much later. So
no, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I remember this one at all.
I remember thinking this one was pretty good. I think it's the guy in the Romulan shuttle and he
do the Romulans have the bunk bed shuttles?
No, they got kind of cool ones.
God, it seems like every other race has a better shuttle pod than the Federation.
Well, the Federation is like two ends of the bell curve, and I feel like every other race is kind of grouped up around the middle. Like, the Federation has a terrible one and an awesome one.
Yeah.
And nothing average or in between.
Yeah. Yeah, they wish they could have a Previa. Well, we got to see it. We're out of vetoes.
Yep.
Ben, this show is made possible by the generous contributions of our listeners. If any of them would like to help support the show, they can go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
We hugely appreciate those donations. We would love to goof around with you and talk about the show. We're on Twitter as at Cut for Time in Adam's case and at Benjamin R. AHR in my case. We use the hashtag Greatest Gen, and it's a lot of fun to see that blended in with crazy constitutional conservatives that are talking about dead World War II soldiers in the context of the election.
We're seeing a lot fewer open casket funeral pictures than we used to see.
No,
in that timeline.
It's more about like making America great again now.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, we are making it great again, aren't we?
Yeah, we sure are. What do we say after our Twitter handle?
We say,
we've got a couple Facebook pages you can comment on and like and follow. We got a couple of Reddit pages. One of them is r/greatestgen. That's the filthier of the two. The classier of the two is r/maximumfun. But I would highly encourage all of our viewers to go over to that Maximum Fun page.
Say what's up.
And say what's up to those people. There's always a comment thread on our episodes over there.
Yeah.
So share your weird pictures and your and your funny comments over there. I'm sure they'd love to get to know you.
Yeah. No update on t-shirts yet, but we're still working on that. And we should thank Dark Materia for our music. And thanks to everybody for listening. With that. Yeah.
Hello and goodbye, new listeners.
With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a full-scale episode of The Greatest Generation.
Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.